This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Time to put on the show.
Michael Bumpus is sitting in for Danny O'Neill. And as promised, it's time to turn to our friend Brock Huard, who has brought his flamethrower because the defense is perhaps in for a bit of a scorching. It's time for Blue 42.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Blue 42! Blue 42!
Good morning, Brock. How are you now?
Good morning, Pauly. I'm doing great. Beautiful day, doing well. Yes, watched tape last night. Can't wait for your fun questions. Let's go. Let's roll.
All right. Well, some more beautiful news, because Pete Carroll just thinks that the Seahawks defense has not been able to play full strength yet.
I don't feel like we've been at full strength. I don't think that we've seen the best of us. I think it's going to come here in time. We're going to have a chance to see us. It's a long season. Our fundamentals are solid. We know what we're doing. We're working hard at it. We did have a couple mistakes like you do, but those eliminated. Getting back to full strength, we need to see what Jamal looks like when he gets back in with us and see how that factors, because we were really, really excited about what he was bringing. He'll be back soon. I think we just got to keep hanging in there until we find it. Looking forward to getting a little boost from Darrell Taylor when he comes back, you know, and things like that, and just continuing to grow.
So patience, I guess, is the key, Brock. It's figured out.
Well, I mean, that is going to be the direction Pete will go. I've listened to it for 10 years, man. He takes it upon himself. It's what tremendous leaders should do. He's not pointing fingers. He's not like Matt Nagy, whose quotes I read this morning that threw up a little bit in my mouth. I've never been a part of something like this. Yeah, you have. Right now, pal. I mean, that's not leadership. And I've been around both sides of it at every level. When you have people that say, through good or bad, it's we, versus those that when it's good, it's we, and when it's bad, it's I. And so Pete is going to constantly push forward. He's going to be more positive than anybody else is. Jamal Adams does make a significant difference to their defense. He does. He is their best run stopper. Jordan Brooks right now, based on the tape, may be their second best run stopper. And, you know, getting him and his legs underneath him, adding Jamal back in, hopefully adding at least some depth on that D-line with Snacks and Rasheem Green and, who knows, a possible trade. There will be some help coming, and that does not surprise me in the least, Paul, that Coach Carroll is going to take responsibility and be the uber-positive voice he seemingly always is.
What can be done right now, though, to fix it? I mean, it seems like there is just a significant lack of talent as far as guys who can win one-on-one matchups, as Bump had been discussing earlier this morning on the defensive line. And in the secondary, all it takes is either Shaquille Griffin or Quentin Dunbar to be off the field, and it just feels like an entirely different back unit.
Well, I would continue Bumpus's thoughts there, not only on the defensive line. And Benson Mayoa, listen, he played hard. That tape shows it. You know, this isn't going to be a torch job on everybody, and it doesn't necessarily have to be this huge negative rip job, because there are some aspects of it. Benson Mayoa plays very, very hard. He actually was by far the most active defensive lineman. But yes, Paul, I think aside from him, you really don't have anybody, and we've been saying this really all offseason into training camp. They don't have a twitchy, fast, dominant guy that can win one-on-ones, as you saw if you watched Monday Night Football last night. The Rams have three of them. They paid Leonard Floyd. They made the right decision, right? They paid him $10 million. You paid Bruce Irvin and Benson Mayoa $10 million between those two. Who would you rather have? You know, for me, I'd much rather have Leonard Floyd, but they make the Bruce Irvin move because they think he can play Sam, the strong light side linebacker, in early downs, and then give you that twitch and rush. But, you know, they don't have that. And I don't have any confidence that will be Darrell Taylor. I'm sorry. Alton Robinson has slowed down. You know, the game has gotten too fast for him. So, yeah, they don't have that aspect. But beyond that, they don't have people in the secondary that are covering one-on-one. Quentin Dunbar played an incredibly poor game. He couldn't cover tight ends. He couldn't cover receivers. He couldn't tackle. Trey Flowers, we know right now his confidence is a bit shot when he plays. You don't feel great about your linebackers. You know, I think Bobby and KJ covering in one-on-one situations, backs, tight ends either. So it's not just winning your one-on-one up front. It is basically everybody, you know, whose job it is to cover and win their one-on-one, not doing it. It's why you're last in the league in total yards and near the bottom five in just about every meaningful category defensively.
Question two, Brock. Getting better, Brock. See what I'm doing there?
That's
getting better,
good,
baby.
Man. That was good. Kind of almost a deep voice, too. Like a question two, Brock.
So I asked Pete Carroll about Russell Wilson on Monday. He looked a bit confused to me at times. Here's what he had to say.
I don't agree with that, that he looked like. I didn't see that. I saw the three plays, the picks. One, he saw exactly what he thought what he was prepared to see, and he gets fooled. You know, he threw for 380-something, you know, and ran all over the field. I thought he had a fantastic night. Think of all the throws that he made to Tyler alone, the great play. So I didn't see like that, Mike, but
now he had a good game other than those picks. I would agree.
Yes.
He threw with conviction. He looked good, but there were those three times where he looked confused. And I always compared, Brock, as when you're shooting a jumper and you know it's going in and you hold that release, it just looks pretty, right? And same thing with when a quarterback throws the rock, his follow through just didn't look like he had conviction on it. What did you see with Russell Wilson and his big mistakes during the game?
Yeah, I probably am a little bit in between both you and Coach Carroll. The first one, he was not confused. He just totally took for granted the fact that the human trafficking that was that pick play was going to get in the way of everybody, and Carson was going to sneak out free, as he seemingly does on that play every single time. So he did not take into account for Buda Baker, who, if you watch that play, was reading it like a hawk the entire time, and he was hoping. In fact, he pulled the trigger kind of like Malcolm Butler did in the Super Bowl. He pulled the trigger so fast that if Chris Carson was not running that route or went the other way, Buda would have been totally out of position because he hit the accelerator from the jump. He anticipated that play. He jumped in front of it. So I think that one bump was much more about Russell taking for granted that the pick and the rub and everything was going to get in the way, and it didn't. And credit Buda Baker for a phenomenal play, and DK for an even better finish to that play. The second pick was DK stopped. Russell scrambles out, and as I anticipated, we didn't see the TV copy, but if you watch the coach's tape, Russell scrambles out, and DK's even with Patrick Peterson, and I think DK was hoping for a back shoulder, but he's about even. Russell throws it deep. DK had stopped for a back shoulder, so that was just a miscommunication, one of the rare times between DK and Russell. And then the third one is the one I think where obviously you're going to win that debate, that there was confusion, that Russell was anticipating everybody coming. They bailed. You know, he threw it. In that one, you could completely see it, and he owned it, you know, post-game, that was totally on him. So I'd say a little bit in between on all three of those, a little bit of miscommunication, obviously, with Russell's decision on the third one between he and DK. That was costly. And then, yeah, I don't think he'll make that mistake again when it comes to that play ever, ever, ever in this league, taking something for granted.
And that leads me into question three, Brock. In years past, we have seen the Seahawks be a lot more conservative with their offensive approach. And Russell Wilson, because the guy just does not turn the football over, has been the linchpin for all of it. I'm not saying that he has been a turnover machine this year, because he only had three interceptions going into this game, but he did have three interceptions on Sunday night. And Pete was interesting in the way that he described said interceptions, where he said, you know, like, these are things that are just kind of going to happen when you throw the football a whole lot. And it's one of those things where I heard it and I thought to myself, and DJ was wondering the same thing behind the glass, is he getting a little more benefit of the doubt for these mistakes? Is he allowed to maybe make some of these risks, these gambles, because of the weight that's on his shoulders and on the rest of the offense?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, if you're not going to be a balanced football team, and they're not balanced this year, you are going to have more turnovers. I mean, this is what, when Pete Carroll for 9 years talked about the circle, and how everything fits together offensively, defensively, special teams, and you know, it all works when you're a championship level team. Those are usually the teams. I heard Urban Meyer go off about this on Saturday and talk about balance, and that in his mind, you know, a team that is out of balance, that can't do something over the course of a season, gets exposed and you don't win championships, that the most balanced teams typically win. And when you throw it 50 times, you are going to put the ball in harm's way. When you ask Russell to play with anticipation, which is, you know, really what he did on two of those three picks, he anticipated DK going deep. He didn't. He cuts the route off, interception. And that's not DK's fault. That's just playing with anticipation. That's Russell trying to get the ball out on a pick play, and you anticipate it. Well, you got to read it out and see the safety. But, yeah, man, when you throw it 50 times, you know, you can look at the numbers. The odds are the interception rate is going to get up, and especially with a team. This is not Drew Brees or Tom Brady that can throw it 40 times but doesn't push the ball down the field. That is not their game. I mean, Russell is the best deep ball thrower in the game. You're going to want him to throw it intermediate and deep. And when you do, the receiver slips, a ball gets tipped. Is, you know, we've seen a couple of his interceptions this year, right? Greg Olsen, tipped interception. You know, more things negative can happen when you put that ball up in the air versus just mashing people at the line of scrimmage, creating a balanced offense. And that's why, you know, I think this argument will continue over the course of the season of just – and I think, honestly, as the weather turns too, you're going to see them strive for more balance. And when Chris Carson went out of that game, he was going to run for 100 yards. There was no question in my mind he was going to have a 100-yard day. They were moving people at the line of scrimmage. I love their misdirection. I love the movement off of it. And Carlos Hyde's a good player. DJ Dallas and Homer are third down or third back role players. But Chris Carson's a difference maker. And when he went out, you know, that also stung a bit.
I don't know what you do at running back right now. A lot of injuries. Carlos Hyde's got the hammy. Chris Carson, he's banged up. Knee contusion for Travis Homer. Never thought I would be saying, oh no,
Rashad Penny, Homer. Still with an ACL. I mean, that position for Pete here in Seattle, there have been a bunch of moving parts in some different spots. There has been no position in Pete's years here that has been more riddled with injuries post Marshawn. I mean, that thing seemingly every year once Marshawn left, because Marshawn was the war daddy. He was the workhorse. He did not miss games. He didn't miss carries for years after year after year. And unfortunately, since his departure, it has been just nothing but a revolving door of injuries at that position.
Brock, what game do you have this weekend?
This weekend, I've got BYE. So I get to just sit home and watch a bunch of football. Yes. Yeah, this is our one weekend off. Troy and Joe do a doubleheader, a Thursday, Sunday. So, yep, I'll get a chance to watch the Seahawks and Niners, and will be an enormous game. You know, as you look at this NFC and you look at this NFC West in particular, I mean, there's going to be no easy outs in this division. You're going to get everybody's best shot. And that is where, you know, when you look at the O-lines and D-lines of the Rams and the Niners, it's going to be big boy football. And to go 500, I think, in the division with some of the limitations you have defensively, to me, would really be the goal.
More or less scared of the Rams after last night's game?
Oh, their defensive line is nasty, but the Seahawks O-line is better, and I think they, you know, look forward to that challenge. The Bears also decimated that group up front. Bears D-line, that's the best. There's probably a great debate, and I think I'd probably land on the Bears being the best front four in the NFL. Those guys are game wreckers, and you see the difference, right? I mean, you see when you don't have that in your environment, on your team, how much harder it makes the job of everybody else. And when you do, man, you could even keep a horrific offensive line, a horrific offensive football team that the Bears are. You can keep them in games and somehow be 5-2 still.
Hit jealousy. That's what I'm feeling. Brock, always appreciate you joining us, man, and we'll hear from you again on Thursday.
Sounds good. Be well.
Bump, this is a team that's going to have to throw the football a lot more. And we were talking earlier in our pre-show meeting that throwing the football more, it's actually something that the Seahawks need to do, and it's because of those running back injuries that we mentioned.
Yeah, keep it rolling. Throw the ball. One, Russell Wilson's not going to throw three picks again. Not this year. I don't think he'll do that. Mama said there'll be days like this. You're not always going to be completely on point. You're going to get fooled sometimes. You're going to make some mistakes. He's human. This is football. But now with that running back situation, you got Chris Carson, who's banged up. Carlos Hyde, who's banged up. Rashad Penny, who's not available. Travis Homer is back. Now you got DJ Dallas. Now, DJ Dallas, I think, is going to be a good running back in this league, but I wouldn't say, okay, you get the start this week. You're going to touch it 25 times, and let's get you rolling. No, let your quarterback, the best player on your team, get this thing going, and then you sprinkle in some DJ Dallas. And the thing about DJ is that he can play receiver. He's great catching the ball out the backfield. He was a receiver at the University of Miami initially, so he's comfortable in those positions. It's all set up for Russell to continue to do what he's been doing, which is throw the rock. You still have DK. You still have Lockett. Your tight ends got involved a little bit more last week. Keep throwing the rock.
It's weird, though. How much can you throw when you don't have Travis Homer? And I can't believe I'm saying this, but the guy is good at picking up the blitz. And I would say that Dallas bump, he's got work to do on that front. And if you don't have Hyde, you don't have Carson, I mean, are you going to call C.J. Procise off the street, the one non-injured running back that the Seahawks have had in the system of late? Or do you give Marshawn Lynch beast mode a call, which I know a lot of people would love, but I don't think is necessarily the best idea? How do you throw every single down, or maybe not every single down, but go a little more air raid bump when you don't have that guy that's going to be standing next to Russ? Because if he goes, you know, empty shotgun every single time, you know, just with the way that he holds onto the football, and all it's going to take is maybe a well-disguised blitz like we saw from Arizona for him to get thrown down to the turf.
Well, you help out by bringing in a tight end and helping. So now you have a tight end and a running back. So now you have seven guys that can help you protect. You lose a guy in the pass game, but you allow Russell a bit more time to go. So you have to adjust. You're not going to ask DJ Dallas to pass pro every single play. If that's not what he's good at, don't put him in that situation that often. He's going to have to grow up and figure this thing out and help out in the pass pro. But if that's not what he's great at, don't make him do it.
Yesterday at his press conference, Pete was asked if he felt that Russ is pressing because of the defense.
I don't think that has anything to do with it. You know, what's going on the other side of the ball, or what Russ has got his game together. He knows what he's doing, and sometimes plays get away. And that's you know, it's to be expected. We try to avoid it and minimize every aspect of that. But unfortunately, that was kind of the story in this one.
He might not be now bumped, but I have a feeling that if the defense continues to not make any progress, that is something that could happen as the season goes along, that he maybe feels a need to make more plays. And we saw at the end of that game between Chicago and Los Angeles last night, Nick Foles all of a sudden at the end, when it was clear the Bears were not moving the football, he just started chucking the ball straight up down the field. And we also saw it in Cam Newton, I think it was his last interception, where he did the same thing. Like, he just threw it as far as he could and he got intercepted. Those are things that do happen when a quarterback maybe feels like there's no help on the other side of the ball or immediately around him on offense. Do you think we're going to see, and you mentioned no three interception games the rest of the way. Okay, I'm with you there, but let's set an over-under of 1.5 interceptions with more than 1.5, games with more than 1.5 interceptions the rest of the way. How many do you think Russ has where he throws two?
Two games.
Okay.
His decision making is so on point. And you mentioned Cam Newton. You mentioned Nick Foles. Who are they throwing the ball to?
Nick Foles is throwing to Allen Robinson, who I know is good, but I don't know any of the New England receivers are good.
And that's what I'm saying. And that's what is going to help this situation. Yes, you have Russell Wilson, the guy who makes great decisions, but you also have guys on the other side who are going to make a one-handed catch to start the game, and Tyler Lockett, who is going to have three catches on a final drive to win the game in DK. You have veteran tight end Greg Olsen who'll sit down in the zone. You have David Moore who will make two or three big plays in a game. So, yes, if they do decide to throw the ball, there is a risk of turning the ball over more, but he has a supporting cast. It's not like they're asking Russell Wilson, all right, you're going to have to throw it and catch it and run it, do everything by yourself. No, you're going to lead this football team, but you also have guys around you who are going to help.
He has a massive supporting cast, really. It's a big one. And, you know, as we get closer to the trade deadline bump, I've been thinking about the assets that the Seahawks have at their disposal to potentially trade. They have some draft picks, not a lot. They have a second-round pick in next year's draft, but no first and no third, no first-round pick in 2022. But they do have, I think they have a couple of fourth-round picks in 2022. They do have future picks, but I also think that they have some players that they could potentially move. They have an unbelievable amount of depth at both wide receiver and at tight end. We have not even seen Philip Dorsett on the field yet. I think you believe that he can contribute when he's there. Is a guy like David Moore expendable? Is a guy like Jacob Hollister expendable? Because I thought both had some very impressive moments Sunday night.
I think Hollister more than Moore. And even Moore, he's on the table just because he's the third guy. But I think that you keep David Moore. I just love what he brings to the table. And he helps in special teams. You don't find too many receivers helping on special teams unless, of course, they're returning the ball. I mean, there are some guys like Ben Obomani when I was playing was great on special teams. But I think Hollister more than David Moore because you have Greg Olsen and you have Will Disley at that tight end spot. Hollister, and he's a good player too. Again, I feel bad throwing guys out there like that. Like, yeah, these guys you can get rid of, but that's the nature of the business. You can get rid of them. You're not going to get rid of Lockett or DK or Greg or Will. They're the next guys up. I would entertain it, but I would do everything I can to keep David Moore. I really think he's doing a perfect job with his role in this team, minus the holding penalty at the end of the game, which it happens. But other than that, I think he's the perfect number three receiver.
What's been the difference for him this year? Because I'm with you in that I really liked what I've seen out of David Moore this year. Last year, I remember constantly thinking to myself, all right, what is it that they like about him? And I remember hearing this offseason talking to some people in the organization, and they were like, this guy's got unbelievable athleticism and talent, and we're finally seeing it. But why is it working this year, especially after an offseason with the COVID ruining everything?
Well, I thought it worked last year too. I mean, what do you need out of David Moore? You need about 400 yards, 15 to 20 catches, 3 to 4 touchdowns. That's what you want out of your number three receiver, and that's what he is on pace to do. And now he's big in the punt return game. I think this year, his role is being increased a bit because you're seeing him more on screens and jet sweeps. If you see a player getting a ball on screen and jet sweeps, that means we're trying to get you the football. Anybody can get a ball in a route concept, running down the field, run and go, run a dig. If the defense is in your favor, you're going to get that football. So with them forcing him the ball in jet sweeps and smoke screens, they're trying to use his athleticism. They like what he's doing at practice. And David Moore, when the ball's in his hand, he's not a Deebo Samuel, but he's a Deebo Samuel type of guy. He can make people miss. He'll get upfield. He's not the biggest dude, but he's thick. He's about 200 pounds. He's strong. He just brings a lot to the table, and I think he is okay with his role on this football team. He understands he's the third receiver. I'll maybe get 3 targets this game, and when the ball is thrown to him, most of the time he comes down with it.
He is Michael Bumpus sitting in for Danny O'Neill. Danny out this morning because his poor pup, Peach, not doing so well, and we're hoping that Peach is going to be able to pull through, but we will see how that one goes. If you can, send Danny a nice well wish. He loves that dog. That dog loves him. So we're all thinking about Danny and the Peach this morning. Up next on Danny and Gallant. What's going on? Do I hear music in my ears? I heard some music. I thought I was going crazy because I have a million songs stuck in my head, and I thought to myself, well, this is just the culmination. This is where the brain has officially broken. Okay, coming up next, we often enjoy to see the failures of others, and that's what we do every single Tuesday at 8:30. We put on the gas face, the guys who totally botched this weekend, including a coach who is doing terrible at his job, who also is doing terrible at keeping Tabasco sauce out of his eyes. Tabasco fiasco, that is next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Bump and I were just having a conversation off air. We're trying to figure out why everybody in the 90s, the early 2000s, started singing like whether it was Hootie and the Blowfish to Pearl Jam and Creed, The Lifehouse, The Calling, Soundgarden. Like, what got everybody to start singing in this yarling way? If you know the answer to that, 710-710 on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line.
Because they're hardcore. Because they're hardcore, Paul.
Are they're the best. I mean, I like all of those bands, especially Creed, and I don't care who knows it. Creed was awesome back in the day. Yes, it's weird to look back on. Don't
it
act
is.
Like...
I listened to them when I was like... 8,
yeah.
I think 9 years old. Yeah, I have some CDs.
I had a really weird collection of CDs as a kid. I had Millennium by Will Smith. I had. I had a Ricky Martin CD. I had two.
I had Nelly Furtado, like indie Nelly Furtado,
flying like a bird.
My boys, like, what are you doing? I'm like, man, I'm feeling Nelly Furtado.
I have no problem with that at all. Some people might give us the gas face for having those collections of CDs. We give the gas face out to bizarre decisions and quotes across the NFL after every single Sunday.
Today's lecture deals with the gas face.
The gas face is going to be given out to a couple of people today. Hit it! So Mike Nolan, Michael Bumpus, is the defensive coordinator of the Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys stink. Their defense is worse. But that wasn't the worst thing for Mike Nolan, because something happened to him at yesterday's press conference.
Obviously, the frustration for him as well is just, you know, look, when he misses them, nobody, whoops, excuse me, I got something in my eye. Just had some Tabasco on my finger and it went in my eye. That wasn't good. Oh, it's terrible. Jeez, I'm sorry.
Bump, you had a great term for it.
Tabasco fiasco.
Perfect.
Is that what I said?
Yes. It's way better. It's way better than Tabasco Gate, which was going to be my name for it, because we just slap Gate on the end of everything now. If you're a player, Bump, and look, your defense stinks, and all of a sudden you see that the guy that's in charge of your defense is having a moment like this, it's got to be pretty hard to take him seriously, right? Like, I know this isn't that big of a deal, but when your team's playing poorly, I would imagine that there's going to be a lot of chat on the team defense group chat roasting this dude.
Oh, yeah, they're going to roast him. I think you still take him seriously. Depends on his work ethic. Hey, this has nothing to do with his work ethic. But if I am a Dallas Cowboy, I'm walking by the meeting room and is yelling, wash your hands, coach, 20 seconds. We're in COVID times. Wash your hands, 20 seconds. Tabasco should never be on your hands, coach.
Does Tabasco get washed out by soap, though? I would say the same.
I don't know.
I actually don't know the answer to that. Someone test it out for us. We're not going to do it, but you can be our guinea pig and let us know if washing your hands after touching Tabasco sauce. You know what really sticks with you? Have you ever, in college we did this once, we put a ghost pepper on our tongue, and that thing stuck with me, and it was like a tiny little bit. That thing, my tongue was like singed for a good 8 hours. It was brutal.
Nah.
Yeah, it wasn't fun. Didn't get better as the night went along. All right, Bump, let's continue the gas phase. Bruce Arians and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers brought in Antonio Brown this weekend. This in spite of a year ago, Bruce Arians saying this about AB.
Yeah, it's just too much miscommunication, too much diva. You know, I just don't. I've heard so many stories, and I like Antonio. He plays as hard as anybody on Sunday. And he practices hard. He's just got to make better decisions off the field, be on time, do some of those little things.
So he's a diva in 2019, Bump. The tune done changed.
I think he's matured, and I believe in second chances. Everybody wants to say that Tom picked him. Tom didn't have anything to do with it. This was some Jason I've been talking for a couple of weeks, ever since the injuries to our other guys. And when the time was right, would we see if we could pull the trigger and fit it into what we want to get done? And we'll see. I mean, we have nothing. If Antonio does what I think he's going to do, he's going to be fine.
Bump, he said that Tom had nothing to do with this. Do you believe him?
Nah, I don't believe him. Come on, Bruce. You can't take all the credit. You first shoot a man down when he's down. Oh, we don't want him, diva. He has to do. Yeah, you probably were right about your assessment. But now he's on your squad, and he's on your squad because of Tom Brady. If Tom Brady wasn't there, I don't think Antonio Brown would be there. That's what bothers me about coaches sometimes. It's like, just be 100. Like, it just was one time throughout an interview, just give me the raw, like, yeah, man, I wasn't messing with him, but Tom Brady convinced me, and I had a talk with him, and now I believe in what's going on, because that's probably what happened. Tom's like, look, Bruce, man, I really think he can help us. When he was in New England, we had a good relationship. Let's get this thing done. Bruce is like, I don't know, Tom, let's bring him in, let's have a sit down, and there was a process to this. It wasn't you You're not the mastermind behind this, Bruce. Come on, man.
I'm starting to see why everyone in Seattle dislikes Bruce. I never had a problem with Bruce, and then I got here, and I remember when anyone brought up his name, there was this, it was almost as if a record would scratch. Everyone would give you this look, and I was like, is Bruce Arians that bad? Record scratch. Everyone stares at Paul, because he's an idiot and is an outsider and doesn't know anything. But now I'm starting to get it, because he's full of it. I mean, that's a load of malarkey. That is a malarkey load right there. And by the way, Tom Brady being quite the weasel when it comes to being asked questions about Antonio Brown. And you guys know how I feel about Tom Brady. But for all the criticism that Russ got when he was asked about Antonio Brown, and we talked about that on Friday, Brady deserves even more. Brady had this guy in his house. Brady was advocating for this guy last year. And when he was asked questions about him personally, Brady found a way to answer around that and to talk about Antonio Brown, the football player, and then just go into some generic Brady speak about the team, the good of the team. Brady's the reason that this happened, 100%.
Brady should be at a point of his career. You know, like when your grandparents get older and they just say whatever they want. Like, I've been here so long, I'm just going to say whatever I want and you got to deal with it. Brady should be the same by this point. He's the GOAT, 6 Super Bowl champion. He's like, yeah, I brought him in. So what? I got him. Don't worry, guys. I got him. That should be his approach.
You're so right. He's not in New England anymore. You know, if you're ever going to be yourself, you can troll New England and show a video of you and Gronk back in New England after you and Gronk connect for a touchdown pass and continue to look really good together. But can we have the inside of Tom Brady now that he is not in New England? Like, you don't have to be the good soldier every day. You can be a normal person now.
He's in Florida. Anything goes in Florida. Talk that talk, Brady.
Oh, you ain't kidding. Florida man headlines everywhere, including ones where I lived. It's crazy. Speaking of Florida man, we have one ex-Florida man, John Gruden. John Gruden was asked about, you know, the coronavirus, the thing that decimated his entire offensive line going into that game against the Buccaneers this weekend. Here's what Gruden had to say about the Raiders and their ability to stop the COVID.
You know, there's a lot of things I think that have been written and said about some of the violations that we have committed. We're on the cutting edge of beating the virus. What we've done as an organization are top-notch. And no, we did not expect the game to be moved. We knew we were going to be compromised somewhat by preparation because of the guys that weren't able to play and weren't able to practice.
Is a team that had its entire offensive line out due to COVID-19 bump on the cutting edge of the virus?
Hey, they're close, baby. They're cutting edge. I don't know, man. What do you expect them to say? Oh, man, we jacked this up. I don't know if we're going to be able to play. I just don't. Nah, yeah, that's coach talk. We got to have a segment of, like, coach talk and really try to decipher what the heck's going on. But what do you expect him to say? He has to say that, even if they're not on the cutting edge of defeating the virus or whatever.
Bob, I expect him to not say we're on the cutting edge of defeating the virus. You could say anything else, like we're working through it. We're on the cutting edge. You might have lost this game. You might have lost this game because your offensive lineman couldn't play. And by the way, it was a couple of weeks ago where you had your whole team out at like a team function, not wearing masks. And again, I'm not going to judge them necessarily for that. I'm just saying if you're a player, there's a different standard that you're held to. There was a player on the Carolina Panthers who had his girlfriend post a video of him online. He's a practice squad player. He was dancing at a bar, not wearing a mask. Dude got cut yesterday. So, I mean, these are the things that you guys have to be smart about, and the Raiders have not been smart about that.
They're in Vegas, too. So much to do.
That's
in
hard.
Vegas.
But it's different. Don't you think it's different now? Like, this probably can't be as enjoyable as Vegas in years past have been.
I got homies who go to Vegas to this day. They drive from Cali to Vegas, and they got their mask on, but it's going down.
It is.
Right, yes.
Well, I might have to join them. That is Michael Bumpus in for Danny O'Neill. I'm Paul Gallant. Up next, we do this traditionally after the Seahawks have been winning all these games, the uncomfortable truths that we see in Seahawks wins. We're going to take a look at the silver linings that can be taken away from Sunday's Seahawks loss. It's Danny and Gallant with Michael Bumpus on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Mariners manager Scott Servais is going to join us at 9 o'clock. Looking forward to talking with him about a really successful season with the Mariners, considering all the expectations and about some of the things that we're going to be looking for this offseason, in particular some of the young players and the progress that they're going to be making. Bump, we do this on Tuesdays, generally when the Seahawks win, which has been happening every single week. We're the Debbie Downers. We find the thing to nitpick from the W, the uncomfortable truth. This time, we're going to take silver linings out of the L. And I want to start off with a welcome to the NFL moment. We had not seen a whole lot of Jordan Brooks this year, largely due to injuries, because he's young, he's trying to get on the field. When you have a full linebacker core with when fully healthy, with Bruce Irvin still there, with Bobby Wagner, with KJ Wright. Sunday night, he finally made a play.
Edmonds in the backfield now. Murray takes the shotgun snap, and he's going to run left side. Stretch it out. He's not going to get there. Chasing him down is Jordan Brooks. He comes, the rookie does, from an inside position, and he comes flying up there along with Ryan Neal. It's fourth and goal from the three, and let's see what Arizona is going to do.
That might have been the best defensive play all Sunday night.
Yeah, man, that burst he had to the football, I'm like, there it is. That's what we've been looking for. And the more reps he gets, the more comfortable he's going to be. It's nice that he flashed. I think that's all we wanted to see, honestly, about out of Jordan Brooks. It's like, okay, we've heard that you're fast, you're aggressive. Let's just see it. And we finally saw it. And, yeah, great play by the rookie.
That's one of those things that I'm hoping can happen more. You need someone that jumps off the screen in some way. And Jamal Adams does with the energy, the speed, and just him moving all over the football field. But you need somebody else to do that. And I don't know that that's necessarily something that Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, athletically at least, can still do the same way. Does that make sense? They're not the same kind of, we're explosive to the football, able to track guys in coverage. You know, you're getting in your 30s. It changes a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, Father Time wins. They're not the same guys they were even 4 years ago, 5 years ago. That's just what happens, but they make up in other places.
Right.
Like KJ being able to slip behind two tight ends trying to block him on a screen. Yeah, you know, like now they get witty. They're like foxes now. They know tricks that these young guys haven't experienced or know yet. So they lose ability, but they gain knowledge.
That moment when KJ Wright blew up the screen, I enjoyed that because Kyler Murray was pissed. Did you see him on the
so
sideline?
Hopkins
too, right. Hopkins was mad. They're both yelling at that tight end on the bench. It got awkward. I mean, I was hoping it would lead to some sort of mutiny on the sideline. It did not, though, because Kyler Murray, it seems, is pretty in firm control of that Cardinals team.
Yeah, they also came together, too. I think it was Daniels was the tight end. And later on in the game, you see them hugging it out. So that's football, man.
Yeah.
You could yell at somebody and hate them for 5 seconds, but it's like, all right, that was a moment. That's not our relationship. That was just a moment. Let's get through it.
Competitive juices always flowing in the middle of an NFL game. That sounded weird. Hey, something else good that we saw, Bump, and we've been looking for this. You thought that this was one of the silver linings to take away. We finally saw a takeaway from one of the Seahawks safeties.
Yeah, Diggs. It was nice to see him make a play. Last year, he stepped on the scene and made noise immediately, right? I think he had a pick his first game. He's lighting dudes up. And he hasn't played bad, not at all, but we haven't had a Diggs moment yet. So to see him pick that football off, and it wasn't an easy one. He was running one way, had to adjust and flip his body over and catch the rock. So it was nice to see Diggs get in the mix. I would love to see more of him.
It's been a difficult year for Diggs just based off of the circumstances, right? Week 2 against New England, he gets ejected pretty early on. Week 3 against the Cowboys, first off, they were just giving up big play after big play, but then Jamal Adams gets injured, and ever since then, it's just been him in the defensive backfield. That's not to say Ryan Neal, who I think had a concussion in that game, is bad stepping in. I really like what I see from Ryan Neal, but obviously he's not Jamal Adams. Diggs, I'm hoping, with a healthy Adams, can be more of the playmaker that he was last year, because to this point, he has not been the impact player that he was last year. He was great, really. I thought he was fantastic coming in last season. I had very low expectations, and he came in, and I thought he was playing at a Pro Bowl level at safety.
Yeah, I don't think he's playing bad either. I just think maybe he has to play it a bit more safe because he knows that, okay, I don't have that Jamal Adams help. Or when a guy like Dunbar struggles a bit, okay, I got to be cautious. Or now Shaq is out because of what concussion protocols. So he's the last line of defense. If it gets by him, it's a wrap. Teams are going deep in general. They play that cover threes. They're attacking the outsides of the field, so it's probably more on the corners. But maybe he's playing it safe. But at some point, he's going to step up and make a play like he did last week. I'd like to see more of him, but if we're not hearing his name, that's also good. That means he's not making big mistakes.
I'm not saying he's bad either. It's just he jumped off the screen last year. This year, you've only seen him a couple of times, and it feels like he's coming up to make tackles and sometimes not taking the best of angles on said tackles. Silver linings in a Seahawks loss. Bump, you also thought that the tight ends were more involved in this game.
Yeah, tight ends got more involved, and that's what I love to see. The more receivers and tight ends that touch the football, the harder it is on the defense. The more they have to spread out. Hollister had 2 receptions. Disley had 2. Greg Olsen had 2. Russell did a great job of spreading the ball around. Now, Lockett had 20 targets and 15 receptions, so we know who he was going to. But he showed that he'd still be able to drop dimes other places. It's always better when everyone's eating. That means there's going to be more opportunities on the field for guys to make plays. It stresses out a defense. I was asking going into this game that I wanted to see the Titans get more involved. I'm not saying they listened to me, but that's exactly what happened.
I'm glad that they got more involved, too, because I also think you got to highlight Jacob Hollister. And I know that's not how the NFL works. You're not giving the ball to a guy when you're a successful football team for the sake of maybe upping his market value. But I think that Jacob Hollister would be able to fetch you something in return. And he has been pretty good when used this year. When he was put into that role last season, Bump, where he was essentially their number one tight end, I think that was a little tricky for him. But now he's in a role where he's the third tight end. He's got to have a lot of confidence with how much he played last season. And if he's not being asked to block, he's pretty good sneaking out and getting open.
Not only was he their number one tight end, he was their number 3 receiver overall. He was 3rd on the team in receptions. So he's got experience. Wow. He knows what he's doing now. And it's you know, some guys are better being that sixth man, if we're talking basketball terms, coming off the bench, letting the game kind of develop and seeing where you have to fit in. And maybe he's okay with that role. If there's a team that spreads the ball out and uses their tight end as kind of like a slot and not as much as a blocker most of the time, Jacob Hollister is a guy. I think he's going to be able to play a few more years in this league.
He is Michael Bumpus sitting in for Danny O'Neill. Danny's out this morning because his beloved Peach is not doing so hot. We're thinking about Danny. We're thinking about Peach this morning. Up next on the program, we're going to welcome in Scott Servais, the Mariners manager. Very successful season for Seattle. Considering the expectations, what you got out of Kyle Lewis, what you got out of a lot of the young players, it was an impressive year. So we're going to talk to him about that, the World Series, and a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere.